Take it away.
Thank you so much, Maria, and thank you, Rob. Hi, everyone. So nice of you to join our very first mini series course. We're really happy to have you here. We will be talking about many different things about implementation science over the next 4 weeks. But today's session is really just the basics to set you up for learning in the next 3 weeks called Implementation Science. What is it and why should I care? So I'm Ronnie Elwey. I am a research career scientist. I'm based at the VA Bedford Healthcare System in Bedford, Massachusetts. I'm part of the Center for Healthcare Organization and Implementation Research, and I am the MPI of EPIC Query, which Maria just spelled out for you, the Evidence, Policy, and Implementation Center Query. And I'm also MPI of the Bridge Query, which is Bridging the Care Continuum for Vulnerable Veterans, where we focus on the uptake of substance use and mental health evidence-based practices to provide the best care for veterans who are at most risk of social determinants of health. So I'm going to just introduce my colleague, Dr. Eric Richardson. Eric, could you say hi?
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Eric Richardson. I am also an investigator at the Center for Healthcare Organization and Implementation Research. I'm at the VA Boston Healthcare System, and I'm also with Ronnie, a member of the EPIC Query and also the Bridge Query.
Thanks, Eric. So the two of us will be managing this a cyber seminar today. I will be presenting, and Eric will be managing the chat. This is not a sit back and just listen to us mode. We really want to hear what you have to say. We really hope that you'll participate when we ask you questions. So without further ado, I will move forward. So before we go on, we do not have any disclosures. We are not presenting anything that is the position or the policy of the VA or the United States government. We are just VA investigators hoping to inform you about implementation science. So EPIC Query, which is a pretty new query within the portfolio of implementation science programs and partnered evaluations that is a part of the VA Office of Research and Development. EPIC Query really believes that there is a role for everyone in implementation science. You don't have to be a PhD or MD investigator to be able to really contribute to getting best practices, evidence-based interventions, or innovations into care or into a service to provide better care and better service for veterans. So, no matter what type of role you have in the VA, we really hope that you'll be able to use what we teach you today and in the next 3 weeks to really make care the best it can be for our veterans. So before we move on, we're going to take a poll and Maria will bring that up for us. So I hope you can see the poll. We're really trying to find out how much implementation science knowledge you have. So you might have none. You're just learning about it now for the first time. A little. You've heard about it before, but never have had any formal instruction or training. Maybe you have a moderate amount of implementation science knowledge. You've read about it and know some concepts, but you've never applied it to your work. And you know a great deal. I've used implementation science in at least one project.
And that poll is currently open and the responses are coming in. We'll just give everybody a couple seconds so they're able to answer the questions. Just don't forget to click that submit. So let's see, they're coming in, still coming in pretty quick. And when it slows down, I'll go ahead and close it. Let's give everybody another second. Okay, it's slowing down. I'm going to close that poll. I make it sound like a horse race, don't I?
Gotta get those polls in.
Yeah. So we have 11% that say A, none. I'm just learning about it now for the first time. 29% have said a little. I've heard about it before, but have never had any instructions or training. 20% say C, a moderate amount. I've read about it and know some concepts. 17% responded with a great deal. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close that and take it over, Ronnie.
Great. Well, it's wonderful to have all of you, no matter your level of implementation science, and perhaps even those who have a great deal of knowledge can contribute to any conversations that take place in the chat function as well. So just to give you a prelude of what's coming up, so today we're talking about implementation science. What is it and why should I care? Our entire series is about using implementation science to move innovations into practice in VA healthcare settings. So the next week, so the next four, next three Mondays are definitely mini-series sessions for you to attend. We'll hear from Dr. Allison Hamilton on June 10th about using implementation strategies and fostering buy-in. On June 17th, we'll hear from Dr. Ellen Gifford evaluating implementation process and outcomes. And on June 24th, from Dr. Sarah Landis, planning for sustainment. I'll also be part of all of these, so I really look forward to seeing you there. So when we think about what we're all doing in the VA, we all are trying to do whatever we can to fulfill President Lincoln's promise to care for those who have served in our nation's military and for their families, caregivers, and survivors. And I'd really like you to think, no matter where you sit and no matter what kind of work you do, whether you're VHA, VBA, or some other part of the VA that I'm not even well versed in, I would love for you to think about now, just in your own head, what you think you might be able to do to make things better for the veterans in the type of work that you do. The reason I want you to think about this now is I will be asking more about this in a few minutes, a few slides forward, and I don't want to spring it on you then. So now is a chance to really think, what could you do? Could you do anything about the work processes that you engage in to make care better, to provide better services? It could be something clinical, it could be non-clinical, anything that you witness or observe on a regular basis when you think to yourself, you know, I think we could do better. It'd be really wonderful for you to try to think about that now and really use that in your mind as a way of applying the implementation science lessons that we're going to be talking about today. So I'd like to share this statistic with anyone who wants to listen to me, because I really think it's the reason why we have this field of science. And it's very disturbing when you tell people that it takes, on average, 17 years for 14% of research to make its way into practice. And another statistic, which I don't have here, is that for those of us who are researchers, who actually apply for research funding and contribute to the research evidence that is out in the world, knowing that only 14% of our research makes its way into practice is just not a very motivating or heartening statistic. So when we don't actually have our research go into practice or inform care, we're actually wasting 85% of our federal funding that we spend on research in this country, which is usually around $180 to $200 billion a year. So it's a lot of money. And so not only are we having challenges getting this research in, it's a big waste challenge. So I like to say that we have an implementation problem, not an evidence problem. As you are all sitting there thinking about what you can do to improve care for veterans, you're probably thinking of many different things that you can do. So I don't think that we have an ideas problem. You know, we don't have a lack of evidence problem. We have an implementation problem. It's actually rocket science in my mind in many ways, because we're dealing with humans and humans are complex beings, to actually move evidence into practice. So really, when you think about why this field is needed, this is the kind of statistic that I like to share with others. So now we're going to take another poll. And this is really to help us in our mini series know the type of people who are attending. So please tell us if your role is you're a doctor or another type of clinician. Maybe you're a clinical leader, and I realize that those could be not mutually exclusive. So just pick one that you prefer. Are you a clinical staff member? Are you a VHA employee, but not clinical? Are you a VBA employee? Are you a researcher like me and Eric, or is there another type of role that you have?
And that poll is currently open. And if you have other, you can go ahead and put that other option into the Q&A. So we'll give everybody just a little bit of time to respond. And those responses are coming in quickly. And when it slows down, I'll go ahead and close that poll. So let's give it another second. I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. If I can, hold on 1 second. For some reason, my system is stuck. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close that poll. And the results are, we have 9% are doctors or clinicians. We have 6% as clinical leaders, 6% clinical staff, 11% as VH employee, not clinical. We have nobody said VBA employee, 31% researchers, and 11% said other. And Eric, you should be able to see the Q&A. And what are some of the other options?
Yeah, we have a couple of PhD students. We have a couple of non-VA researchers, a few research staff, a couple of veteran slash patient former VA researchers as well.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, and project managers and we have, yeah, people still bringing in. So there's some project managers, a wide range.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you everyone for completing that poll. That just really helps us. And the diversity is awesome. Really happy to have you all here. So what will you get from this course? Our goal is for you to have a roadmap of how to implement any innovation in your workplace and your work setting by the end of this 4 weeks of the mini course. So we'll get to that roadmap towards the end, so you'll know what it is and how you can use it. But no matter where you sit, we believe that something probably needs to be improved. So thinking back a few slides ago when we talked about the mission of the VA, if you could, what would you improve? It would be really awesome if you could just put a few words into the chat so that Eric can see it. And we'd love to hear what you're thinking about right now. And don't be shy. We're not going to yell out anyone's name or call on anyone in particular, but it'd be really fun to hear what you are thinking about. Is the chat function happening, or is?
Yeah, there's a okay. we have a few coming in. You have to use the Q&A for the chat
function. Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Sorry
yeah.
About
so
that.
There's yeah. So it'll say Q&A will be where we can see.
Oh, got it. Okay.
The answers. So we have some answers saying person-centered care, health equity, women's health. Wait times to see specialists is coming in. There's mental health for older adults, and now they're really coming in. So we have
onboarding. Everyone, throw you off with that chat function.
Lots of great ideas and suggestions. Behavioral innovations. One mentioning organizational behavior, change management, and large implementation projects. So just lots of great comments.
These are really great. And you might have some more than one idea. And so obviously you can share any or all of them with us, but you might, as we go through today, start to think about some other ideas too. So all ideas are welcome. We're all about greater, accessibility, efficiency, all of the things that you're talking about. This is really wonderful to hear. So thank you. Keep your ideas in mind, and you're going to need to reflect on those as we go through today's course. So if you also are thinking, you know, I'm not really sure what kinds of things need to be fixed or what are the kinds of things that are currently being worked on in the field, we have a few different websites up here so that you can see some ideas that people already have and have been working on. So for example, depending on your role, you may know about one or more of these, but you know, the VA and the DOD have these different clinical practice guidelines, and often, you know, you might actually, it's not what I want to say out loud, but basically you might see that like, oh gosh, we should be doing this, but we're not. So those are some ideas to think about if you want to, you know, you'll have all of these slides, so you'll be able to click on these links. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement is more in the quality improvement place where a lot of the work that we do in implementation science originates in the QI space. And so people might be thinking, well, what can I do in my specific clinic to really improve the care that I deliver? And so you might be able to hear about those types of efforts by reviewing some of the information on that website, the IHI website. SAMHSA's, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency in the in the Health and Human Services, and they have an evidence-based practice resource center. This is again focused on mental health, substance use, but you will be able to see what kinds of things people have been trying to do to improve care in those areas, but not necessarily for veterans, but for populations as a whole. And then the Choosing Wisely campaign, which is actually ended, but they still have a website, and you can go to this to find out what people are saying is really very efficient care that we should be doing. Choosing Wisely was actually created to help us realize some of the things that we shouldn't be doing in care, things that for which there's not a lot of evidence base for. And when we do these particular aspects of care, we are contributing to the waste in healthcare. And so it was a really big campaign to get us to think about what really needs to be done and what shouldn't be done. And so each of these websites might provide you with just a little bit of information along the lines that you're already thinking about in terms of what can be done in your space. So this might, for the researchers in the group, you might already know this query implementation roadmap. For the clinicians, this might be something new. But QUERI, which stands for Quality Enhancement Research Initiative, is the implementation science arm of VA Office of Research and Development. And this roadmap, developed by Dr. Amy Kilborn, who is currently the acting director of health systems research and the former director of QUERI, Amy and colleagues developed this QUERI implementation roadmap to really align with the learning health system. So on the outside are the learning health system components, and on the inside are the QUERI implementation roadmap components. I use this roadmap in every single implementation project that I do because it's really very concrete to be able to take what you're doing and put it into these three different areas. There's pre-implementation, there's implementation, and there's sustainment. Sustainment is our holy grail in implementation science. We're really hoping to get to that place. It's very hard, hence the term rocket science earlier. We might not be doing rockets, but we're working with humans, and getting to sustainment, it means a lot of human behavior change and is what I definitely would call the holy grail. Today, we're going to focus mostly on pre-implementation, but I just wanted you to be able to see that there are these three components. They are circular, but that doesn't mean you don't actually go back to a previous phase. You might actually find that in your implementation phase, you haven't learned enough from your pre-implementation phase and you need to go back and learn more. There was actually a really good paper published about a year ago showing that very quantitatively across hundreds of projects that the longer we spend in our pre-implementation period, the more likely we'll be successful in our implementation efforts. So I really, you know, a lot of people think, well, this is, you know, a formative stage. I really need to run through this quickly. I really need to get to my big effort, which is my implementation effort. And I'm here to just try to get you to put the brakes on for that and to really delve and spend time in this pre-implementation period, because that's where you will learn a lot about what is needed to create a successful implementation. So each of our weeks, we will focus on this roadmap, and it actually will be part of the roadmap that you create when you're trying to think about, well, how am I going to get my innovation into practice? And we'll definitely be coming back to this today and throughout. I thought it would be really fun and hopefully helpful if we spent some time on a case. This is a made-up case, as a way of thinking about what it might be like for some of you when you're thinking about what you can do to improve care and services for veterans. So this case was created based on research that was done by Jeff Cully and colleagues in Houston at the Houston VA. And I just sort of took their research and made it into a little scenario for all of us to review. So in this particular case, we're thinking about primary care and we're thinking about it in rural settings. And the focus is on veterans who have both depression and diabetes. So this is Rose. This is a stock image from PowerPoint. So this is not anyone we know. Rose is a nurse at what we call the East VA Medical Center. That is a made up medical center name. And it is located in the rural part of the United States. Rose works specifically with veterans who have both depression and diabetes. And this results in poor self-care behaviors by these veterans, and they have worse glycemic control. So given that both of these conditions are really prevalent among our veterans, as well as also non-veterans in the United States, I thought this could be an example that really perhaps touched on some knowledge that many of you have. So Rose, in reading some great research by Jeff Cully and colleagues, comes up with a great plan to offer a blended diabetes, depression, behavioral health coaching program in primary care. She wants to do this through twice a month, 30-minute telephone sessions, and three monthly telephone 15-minute follow-up sessions. And she hopes to run this coaching program over a six-month period. We all know that in our PACT teams, we have dashboards and we're able to figure out which veterans are those who have uncontrolled depression and diabetes. And she's really going to tap into that information that she has in primary care to really offer this coaching program to these specific veterans. So that's just to set the scene. This is what Rose is really hoping to focus on. And what we want to do here is think about, well, how can implementation science help her with this? So thinking about the query roadmap, we are going to think about the pre-implementation phase. So there were three aspects to that query roadmap. What is the problem that you're trying to solve? Who are the relevant stakeholders or interested parties that you need to involve in this process? And then what are the best practices? So just thinking about what you just read about Rose, think about what is the problem Rose is trying to solve and put your information in the chat. Who are the relevant stakeholders that she needs to connect with? Who do you think she needs to connect with to make this coaching program possible in primary care? And then she already has a best practice in mind. So what else does she need to think about? So given that, you know, she has some idea, she's read some research, she knows that, you know, coaching would be a great activating way of helping these veterans, but is that enough? What does she need to be thinking about? And if you have some ideas, we'd love to have you put that in the chat. So first, what is the problem that Rose is trying to solve? Yeah, exactly. Uncontrolled diabetes and depression among veterans. And specifically, and this is important because context always matter, she is in a rural part of the country, right? And so rural care is potentially a challenge for accessing care. And I am assuming that's why she has brought in telephone care, because it might be easier for these patients to participate in this behavioral coaching program. And then when you think about the relevant stakeholders and the interested parties, just as a FYI, the Centers for Disease Control don't want us to use the word stakeholder. They feel that it is not an appropriate term for us to use, because it really has some tribal implications that makes people who come from Indigenous communities feel very uncomfortable. So we're really trying to move away from it. And so that's why I use the word interested parties. So when you think about who are those interested parties that Rose needs to connect with, that's right, veterans themselves, like, would they be interested in doing this? Leadership, thinking about who's in the primary care department, you know, who needs to buy into this. Coworkers, it'd be great to learn, like, do other people who are in a similar role as Rose think this is important? What about other clinicians in the program? So these are all definitely people that she needs to think about. I love the idea of actually bringing in pharmacy as well. And yeah, like the different engagement groups and Office of Rural Health, that's a wonderful thing to be thinking about. Like, maybe there's something that they can do to help support this and maybe even provide some in-kind support. And caregivers, absolutely, because we know that to engage in any healthy behavior requires the support of others around us. So we definitely don't want to leave out our families and our caregivers. So you guys are awesome. Clearly, you've been doing this for a while, so this is great. And yeah, like, she, Rose just can't go off and do this. She really needs to make sure that this is within the scope of what the clinic and her leadership want her to do, her own direct manager. So there's a lot of involvement in her pre-implementation phase to really learn from these different interested parties that you've all mentioned, so that she knows what is up, you know, what both will help her do this behavioral health coaching program and what is also perhaps going to get in the way. And now when we think about the best practice, what else does Rose need to think about? So she knows that the problem is comorbid depression and diabetes among her veterans in this rural primary care setting. She has this idea about behavioral coaching, but what else does she need to think about? And there are, just as a reminder, there are no perfect right answers to this. She's got a great idea, but what else does she need to think about? Is this idea ripe for implementation, or are there other things that she needs to think about before she moves forward with this? Yeah, these are great comments. So sustainability. And I love that someone said that. And because one of the things we talk a lot about in planning for sustainability is our fourth session on June 24th that Dr. Sarah Landis is going to be running. But I love for all of us to think about that from the beginning. And that's why I showed you the entire query implementation roadmap. We will never get to sustainability or sustainment if we don't think about it in advance. And that often goes against people's intuition. They think, well, why should I think about sustainability now? Because I don't know if I'm going to get to a phase where what I've done works and can be implemented, it's feasible, et cetera. So why should I think about sustainability now? But I can assure you that if you don't think about sustainability now, it definitely won't be sustained. So I love the idea of thinking about, perhaps with these other interested parties, what is going to be needed to make this behavioral health coaching program sustainable. And yes, adaptations, absolutely. So maybe the way this initial behavioral coaching program was tested, you know, worked for one subset of this veteran population, but it may need adaptations for another geographical location or for other types of veterans. Definitely ages of veterans matter and their overall health status. Yes, feasibility and acceptability. You could have a really great intervention that's been tested before, but maybe with a new group of people, they're like, yeah, that's just not going to work here. On both the provider side, so Rose is probably going to have other nurses help her with this. I'm guessing she alone can't do this. So they have to feel that this is both feasible and acceptable, as well as the veteran patients and the family caregiver who will probably be supporting that veteran to make sure that they attend. And also, I haven't given you any of this context, but we don't know what behavioral health coaching program is going to be telling these veterans to do. So we have to keep that in mind as well. She needs to review the literature. There might be other things out there have better evidence or perhaps might be more feasible to do. You guys are really awesome. I can't even read all of these. You're doing such a great job. So cost, that's huge. Yeah, so you guys are doing great. These are all exactly what I wanted you to be thinking about. So thank you for that. So to do this type of work, this pre-implementation work, as well as our implementation and our sustainment work, we really need to be guided by a theory, a model, or a framework. I love this quote from Kurt Lewine, who was a German-American social psychologist, passed away in 1947, just after World War II. But this quote of his is so relevant all the time. And so I love to share it, which is, nothing is more practical than a good theory. Now, before I go into talking about theories, models, and frameworks, of which I'm only going to do a little bit, I just want you to know that I know that theories, models, and frameworks are not everybody's love. They are mine. I'm a social psychologist, I'm a health psychologist, and I love to use these as a guide. So if theories and models and framework are not your cup of tea, what I'd like you to think about is how these theories, models, and frameworks can help you. They really guide you in thinking about, well, what is it that I need to be thinking about at the pre-implementation stage, at the implementation stage, and at the sustainment stage. So, you know, sometimes it's really hard to think about, well, two things. Sometimes it's really hard to think about everything that you need to be thinking about. And sometimes it's almost paralyzing in a way to think about everything that you need to be thinking about. And so a theory, model, and framework sort of helps you hone in to things that are actually really important for you to think about, as opposed to the universe. You guys are really great. You're still putting into the chat all the different things that Rose needs to be thinking about, and I'm loving it. So keep going with that. So this is the only big slide I'm going to give on theories, models, and frameworks. I'm going to introduce you to one, just one later after this. But when we think about theories, models, and frameworks in implementation science, they come in these five categories. They come in process. So look at the bottom row here: process models, determinant frameworks, classic theories, implementation theories, evaluation frameworks. I'm not going to talk about all of these. I'm going to talk about one determinant framework today, because when we're talking about pre-implementation, we're really thinking about what are the facilitators and barriers that will enable Rose to either enable her with the facilitators or prevent her, the barriers, from doing her behavioral coaching program in primary care. So we call those barriers and facilitators, we call them overall determinants, implementation determinants. And so there are some very specific determinant frameworks that help you think about, well, what should I be talking to my interested parties about? What do I really need to be thinking about? So I'm going to present one to you. If you're interested in any of these other ones, we can talk about it in the chat or offline, and it might come up in the other three sessions that follow. But just to let you know, there are these five buckets of theories, models, and frameworks that we think about in implementation science. So this is probably not the usual snapshot you see of this framework, but this is the IPARIS framework. And IPARIS stands for Integrated Promoting Action on Research, Implementation, and Health Services. I'm really bad at acronyms, so I just had to look at my notes to make sure I didn't get that wrong. But really, this model says that successful implementation is a product of knowing knowing different aspects about the innovation. So in this case with Rose, that is the behavioral coaching program. The recipients, that is the veteran patient and their caregiver and other family members perhaps. But I would also put in the recipients category the other people who are going to be delivering it. Because when you are doing implementation science, you don't want to be the person implementing something. That is not sustainable. That isn't going to happen. You can't sit there and be there for the next, 6 months, 3 years, 10 years, et cetera. You really need to encourage somebody else to be doing this type of work. And so you want to bring these people on board to learn about like what their values and beliefs are, et cetera, the people who are actually going to be delivering that behavioral coaching program. And then in terms of context, we really want to think about, the organization, the leadership, what kind of priorities or incentives are there. And so all three of these things are important to think about at the pre-implementation stage, and then they're going to actually be something that you carry on with at the implementation stage. So I'm going to show you how you can use this model with that pre-implementation part of the query roadmap. Before I go any farther, Erica, are there any things that we need to bring up or answer?
There's a couple of questions about kind of the barriers and thinking. And one question was barriers and what question facilitators. And then the question right. was, does that constitute determinants?
Yes. And so, for example, sometimes we'll learn something really positive in talking to those interested parties. For example, you might learn that, you know, someone else, a leader or another nurse just like you, have also been thinking about this problem, and they agree that this is a high priority topic to address. They think that the coaching program is a great idea. And so given that you have that kind of support from others, that's your facilitator, you want to capitalize on that. So you don't want to ignore that. You are also trying to find out what are the potential barriers that I'm going to have for implementing this behavioral coaching program, and learning about them now so that there's something you can do about them prior to the implementation phase. So together we think about the barriers and facilitators as implementation determinants. So that's where that term comes from. I hope that's helpful. And also, I just noticed that someone loves theories, models, and frameworks as much as me. So thank you.
And there was one more question about from a research social science perspective, or social determinants based on theories like the health belief model or Prochaska's stages in changing health behaviors?
I think that implementation determinants can be based on a lot of things. So as you just saw in so IPARIS is a determinants framework. And so you can actually see that we're thinking about the determinants and the innovation, like what people think about the innovation that you're going to implement, what the recipients think, and what the context is like. And so a lot of these come from, you can see a lot of social psychology in here with motivation and goals and beliefs. You can see a lot of aspects of organizational studies with organizational context and leadership incentives. And then the innovation piece, a lot of those actually come from the theory of diffusion of innovation. Those relative advantage, observability, usability, for example, those are all part of the theory of diffusion of innovation. So you can really have different things. You can really use different aspects of different models, but it's kind of complicated to use a whole bunch of models. So we look for like one or perhaps two that can really help us crystallize what we need. And in terms of, I saw a question, does one need to use a TMF in addition to the query roadmap? So I think of the query roadmap as a process. So we need to go through thinking about pre-implementation prior to our implementation and to inform our sustainment. And yes, there are some good questions in there in the query roadmap, such as who are the stakeholders? What are the problems you're trying to solve? You know, what are the best practices? That's in the pre-implementation phase, for example. But that doesn't really tell me the different determinants I should be thinking about, which is why I'm bringing in IPARIS. So that's why I'm combining those two things here to help Rose think more about what her behavioral coaching is going to be like. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah. And then we had one more about, there are so many models, frameworks. How do you choose? I was going to put into the chat the resource from Washington University or University of Washington as well.
Dissemination-implementation. Yeah. That would be great. So yes, there are a lot. I can't even remember how many there are now. There's definitely over 150. That doesn't mean you should use all of them. Laura Damschroeder, who many of you probably know, who retired from the VA a year ago, had a great quote, which was, there is no such thing as a right theory or model or framework or a wrong theory or model or framework. There's just one. It's all about which one is the best fit. So I'm presenting to you IPARIS here, thinking about successful implementation as a product of innovation, recipients, and context. But you could think of something else. There might be something else out there. And because I didn't want to go too deep into theory, model, and framework, I'm not presenting many of them. But you might see something and say, yeah, that's maybe that's too organizationally or leadership oriented. I'm actually thinking about more individual behavior. That's more important to me. But maybe, you know, so there are different ways for you to decide. I think it's quite possible that there are many different types you can choose from that will all be just fine. So just thinking about whatever is that best fit for you is really important. And when I say best fit for you, I'm thinking about the project that you're trying to do. And we can certainly have more of these questions towards the end as well. So Rose needs to do some pre-implementation methods. She has these different determinants. She needs to examine what are the barriers, what are the facilitators, and you've already identified all the different interested parties that she really needs to engage with. There's a whole host of them. And so how might she do that? And so, you know, when we have a theory, model, or framework like the IPARIS here, we want to just, you know, think about the innovation. We want to learn about from the recipients. We want to think about the context. You know, that can help you think about, well, what are my methods? So you could do some interviews. You could have some discussion groups. You could field a survey to find out what people think about this. You can observe. Sometimes some of the most important information is just to observe what's currently happening and then pointing out to people how we could have better provided that care or that service to that veteran through our direct observations. We can also attend meetings and hear what people are thinking about, and maybe they too are struggling with what we're thinking about. And so you'll know that those are actually some things that you can use those meetings to capitalize on, perhaps when people are bringing up some challenges that they are experiencing in a particular care for veterans. So these are the different things that you can start to use. I just want to tell a quick story that I think is great about how it's important to really think about the different interested parties and how they can really impact whether something gets used or not. And this is a great story that was shared with me by my colleague, Dr. Weston Brent Elliman, who's an infectious disease physician and implementation scientist in the VA Boston. So this is the Brooklyn Bridge, which was at the time in 1883, the longest suspension bridge, perhaps in the world. But people wouldn't use it. People were like, there's no way that bridge is strong enough to hold us. We're not going to use this bridge. And so P.T. Barnum, the famous P.T. Barnum, went to Brooklyn city officials and basically said, you know, let me help out. Let me take Jumbo and some elephants and camels across this bridge to really illustrate how strong it is and how it can be held. And they said, no, 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 we don't need to do that. People will come around. Well, they didn't. A whole year went by and nobody used this bridge. And so then P.T. Barnum again came forward and said, okay, no one's using this bridge. Let me try this out. And so really from observation that no one was using this bridge and it was a big problem, he and the people who initially said no to him said, okay, fine, do it. Jumbo led in 1884, a year after this bridge was ready, 20 elephants and 17 camels across the Brooklyn Bridge. And people were like, oh, okay, it's strong enough for these elephants and camels. It's going to be strong enough for us. We're going to actually use it. And so this is just kind of a much more dramatic way of talking about the importance of other people and their perceptions, the recipients, for example, the innovation, which is the bridge, the context, which was, you know, this was the city, connected by a river, you know, there's a river between them, really needed this bridge, how we can really think about the importance of listening to others and coming up with a solution. So that's just a fun thing that I love that Weston shared with me. So going back to Rose, Rose is trying to solve the problem. So that's in the pre-implementation phase. What is the problem? She's trying to address the problem of depression and diabetes among rural veterans in primary care. And so she knows that she's starting in the pre-implementation phase of the query roadmap. And then she is using the IPARIS framework to really help her think about, well, the problem is the depression, the comorbid depression and diabetes. So I have this coaching problem. I need to have people tell me what they think about this. Like, is this behavioral coaching problem better than what we're currently doing in primary care? That would be a relative advantage. So that comes from the theory of diffusion of innovation, as I said earlier. Is there a way of using this behavioral coaching program in a way that people can observe whether it works or not? Can they see if it actually is feasible or usable? And what do people know about the underlying knowledge source of this problem of depression and diabetes? Maybe it's such that people don't realize what a big problem it is, and maybe she needs to share with them some data that that's a problem. So that's how this IPARIS framework can help her think about the problem she's trying to solve. Then when she thinks about the recipients, the veterans, the caregivers, but also other clinicians who are going to need to help her with this coaching program, she needs to think about who they are, and you all did a great job with that. And then what do they think about this behavioral coaching? So this is where we get at, well, what are their values and beliefs? Is depression and diabetes this comorbidity of these two problems together, is this something that they feel is really important in their lives? What are their priorities? What are their beliefs? What kind of motivation do they have to actually address this problem? You know, maybe their goals are such that they have goals. Like, maybe they want to be able to be healthier, to go on longer walks. Maybe they need to lose some weight, or they have motivation for that, but they don't realize that there's a connection between the depression and diabetes. And so maybe that's something that Rose will uncover by learning from her different interested parties about that. So maybe they don't feel like they have the skills to either provide the behavioral coaching or to benefit from the behavioral coaching. So that's how the IPARIS framework can be used to think about that with the stakeholders. And then, in the context, this is kind of what I was getting at when I was thinking about what are all the other things that Rose really needs to be thinking about when, you know, she's talking to her interested party, because every organization is different. So what is the context like where she is? Are people excited about trying new things, or is there more of a, we should just keep the status quo attitude, you know? And if there is that kind of attitude, how she'll have to learn how to overcome that. Maybe she can identify one or two leaders in the group whose ideas align with hers, and maybe they can be partners with her in this initiative. Maybe there are ways of incentivizing this type of coaching, maybe setting it up as a priority for others to participate in. So there are different things that she can learn about when she's either doing her interviews, her surveys, observing some behaviors, attending meetings, et cetera. These are the ways that she can actually learn about this. And so once she has done these methods using this IPARIS framework and thinking about just the pre-implementation part of the query roadmap, she'll have a whole set of pre-implementation determinants that she will need to overcome or build on, because we've talked about facilitators too. So basically, what can we actually do to overcome those barriers, and what can we do to capitalize on those facilitators? That's where something called implementation strategies fits in. And so we will be talking about that in future sessions. Excuse me. So before we move forward with what we're going to be doing with these determinants, I want us to step back and think about something super important that I haven't addressed yet, which is what challenges related to health equity are potentially impacting the implementation of Rose's innovation. So just to get us all on the same page, health equity refers to providing a fair and just opportunity to be healthy by reducing and eliminating disparities in health and its determinants that adversely affect excluded or marginalized groups. So we're talking about rural veterans with chronic illness in primary care. So do you have some ideas about what particular challenges that Rose might need to uncover and address related to health equity so that she can use her behavioral health coaching program with these veterans? I'd love to hear what your ideas are, and if you could put them in the chat, that would be awesome. Yes. So different resources that are needed to support these veterans, health literacy, transportation or technology. Yes, these are all things that could be related. LGBTQ, this is Pride Month, right? So are we being inclusive in the way this behavioral health coaching program is being rolled out? Yes, so it's possible that this coaching program assumes a certain level of knowledge, and maybe that is something that she'll learn through her pre-implementation work, where she'll be like, oh, I need to actually step back and cover some things around nutrition that might actually be basic that she thinks veterans need already know, but they don't. Leadership's views on marginalization, the different disparities between providers and patients. Is this because of thinking about how they relate to each other? So when people are of different race and ethnic backgrounds between provider and patient, I'm not sure. Language differences, exactly, cultural issues. All of these are really important. And yes, this issue of access to food. So, you know, when we talk about health equity and other social determinants of health, we also have to focus on things like housing challenges, food insecurity, housing insecurity. So these are all really important. It's really hard to focus on your health if you're also really worried about where are you going to live or where you're going to get your next meal. So I agree that when we think about health equity, we're really opening a really big box of things to think about. So yes, in pre-implementation, she'll really need to make sure she's talking to a lot of different groups that can represent all the different challenges that could occur related to health equity. So that's awesome. So yes, and you know, how culturally aware are a lot of the people that she's working with? Maybe her colleagues or her leadership, et cetera. So that's, yeah, these are all really great things. Thank you for thinking so much about this. So we've come to really the end of what we're talking about today, but for planning Rose's next steps, which we will launch into next week, I wanted to sort of have you think about some other issues. So Rose now has some really great ideas about her pre-implementation determinants, both her barriers and facilitators. She has some health equity challenges in mind that she needs to address. Hopefully she's incorporated the types of people, the interested parties, into her pre-implementation work to be able to understand that. And then moving forward, these are the types of things that we really will need to think about. So she's going to, in the future, and we'll talk about them in these different dates, she's going to have to think about how she can capitalize on her facilitators and address her barriers by developing and testing implementation strategies to get her behavioral health coaching program in place. So that's more on that on June 10th. Once these strategies have been identified and used, and we're trying to get behavioral health coaching up and running, we'll also have to see, how are we doing? What kind of outcomes are we seeing? And by outcomes, we don't just mean effectiveness. Of course, effectiveness is important. Is depression being treated well? Is a veteran's diabetes under control? Of course, those are super important. But we also want to get back to some of the things that you already mentioned early on. Like, is it feasible? Is it acceptable? Is it something that can be sustained? So those are the kinds of outcomes we want to also assess. And then finally, on June 24th, we'll go back to what we talked about can we really make this a sustainable program where it becomes part of usual care in primary care? So whenever there is a veteran that has comorbid depression and diabetes, that they are in, and it's not, and neither of these is well treated, how can we immediately get them into this behavioral health coaching program? And how can we make sure that we are doing this in a way that is both accessible to the veteran, addresses all of the health equity concerns that you've raised, and really can be carried forward for a while, and that there's enough resources in place, and we've addressed the costs, et cetera. So those are all things that will be coming up in the future, the future three sessions. I'm not going to go into this in detail for time. We're going to be talking about this very fancy language called the thing. So the thing in this case is the behavioral health coaching. And what we do to get the thing in place is our implementation effort. And then the implementation strategies are the stuff we do, which we're going to talk about next week, to help us do the thing. So this is just a way that Jeff Curran and colleagues at Little Rock have been thinking about this. And we've all sort of really appreciated this very simple non-scientific language as a way of distinguish between the thing, the evidence-based intervention or the innovation. What can we do to do the thing? And so that's what we're trying to do here, doing the thing. And then this is just a brief snapshot because we will talk about this more next week, but we really need to think about these implementation strategies that we can develop and use to overcome those barriers and capitalize on those facilitators that we've identified. So some of the things that you might think about are how to train and educate different interested parties. How can we support our clinicians? How can we engage our veterans? How can we change the infrastructure of where we work to make it more possible to do this health coaching program? So these strategies, these 9 different buckets of strategies, equate to about 73 implementation strategies. There are probably more than that, but we don't need to know all 73. What you really need to think about are these different buckets and what we're trying to do, how we're trying to achieve that. How are we using these strategies to help us do the thing, which is the behavioral health coaching? At the end of all of our sessions, you're going to have a map, and I really encourage you, you're going to have these slides. You can create your own, take a snapshot of this, do whatever you want. But I really want you to think about these 3 columns as we move forward. At the top, you can put your, what are you trying to implement? What are you trying to do to improve veteran care? What are you going to do in the pre-implementation stage in terms of solving problems, engaging stakeholders, best practices? And then also, what are you going to do in the implementation phase? And what are you going to think about for sustainment? So this is going to become the roadmap that you use for the future. And that is the end of our session. And I'll just leave it up here in case anyone has any questions about these. But thank you all for attending and for participating in the chat and polls with us. I see that there is a question about the figure showing an umbrella of various theories. There are some evaluation theories. REAIM is one of the ones that's most well known. And that helps us to understand, did we actually do what we thought we were going to do? And you would use that more in an implementation and sustainment phase. And so that can be something that's discussed in the future ones, the future sessions of this too. I think the slides are going to be sent to you.
I also provided the link in the Q&A and the chat if anybody would like a copy of the slides. This is recorded. In about 2 days, everybody will receive an email regarding this session, the recording, and transcripts and the other handouts. There is a quick question. I don't know if you saw that. It said, could you please share the definition you use for health equity in the chat?
Oh, yes. I don't know if I can type it that fast, but I will try. Or maybe I could make sure you get it next time, because I know it's 12:59 and this is going to shut down soon. But it's by Peter Braveman and it was in Health Affairs in 2017. But I will figure out a way of making sure that you get that. So I was just going to say, Marie, I think we're finished.
Yeah, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to prepare and present for today. And I want to thank everyone for joining today's HSR Cyber Seminar. When I close the meeting, you'll be prompted with a survey form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. We really do count and appreciate your feedback. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you.